Talking the world of Hawkeye football with you. Basketball on the horizon. We're still a little ways before we get into that. We're going to talk about a top five football team again as they get it done this week against Colorado State 24-14. Biz, not the prettiest of performances, but got to win your clunkers, as our guys like to say over at the Solid Verbal. That was a clunker on Saturday.
Yeah, the performance wasn't glorious, Trent, but let's look big picture first. What a glorious, glorious Saturday to be an Iowa football fan. So you get an Iowa W, but on top of that, you get losses from Iowa State, Nebraska, Wisconsin, and Minnesota. And not just run-of-the-mill losses, Trent, but losses in excruciating fashion from all four teams. You've got Iowa State and Nebraska apparently deciding that special teams just don't matter, or that they don't need an actual special teams coach or to coach up their players in special teams. You've got Wisconsin, another complete debacle from Graham Mertz. And then you've got Minnesota losing and was it the biggest spread loss in multiple years, and the boat sinks against a Bowling Green. So, you know, big picture, Trent, again, the Iowa performance, not so glorious, but a great day to be a Hawkeye just in general.
Yes, it was. Let's get into that great day to be a Hawkeye from what we saw from our team, and let's get into it here down at the half, 14-7. There were those moments you wonder, is this going to be another one of those clunkers in Kinnick against a team that they should beat? But Iowa ultimately pulls away in the second half, gives up, what, 63 yards of total offense in the second half. They ratchet it up, and though it was a 10-point game, never really felt in danger that they were going to lose it in the fourth quarter, at least to me. How about you?
Yeah, once we got up 21-14, I had no concerns at all. I just didn't see Colorado State ever being able to mount a serious offensive challenge against us. But believe me, when it was 14-7 and we came out and punted twice in the second half, I was definitely concerned. It's, you know, and the concerns, you know, we talk a lot about Spencer Petras, and you know, in my section or our section at the games, man, people like to bitch and moan about Spencer Petras, but he was the least of our concerns on offense on Saturday. The running game and offensive line is an issue, Trent.
Big time. And I think more than anything, it's outside. It's what they have at the tackle spots. I don't know if that's something that can be fixed. Am I going crazy here?
Oh, honestly, I'm not sure. When you say it's outside, I think it's everybody except for the center. I think we've got four very average linemen right now, and it's not their fault. They're young. I mean, sure, we started the game. Our left tackle was a redshirt freshman, and our left guard was a true freshman. I mean, that's a lot to ask out of guys that have been in the system 2 years or less. And, you know, Iowa football is not rocket science. When we have experienced lines that have been there 3, 4, 5 years, they're generally pretty darn good. And I think both Mason Richmond and Colby and DeJong, all those guys will end up being fine linemen. But their youth definitely showed. And Colorado State, to their credit, was a really physical football team. They kind of used the Wisconsin playbook of, you know, we're going to out-physical you. And on the lines, at least their defensive line against the offensive line, they won that battle more times than not on Saturday.
I walked away really impressed by Colorado State. I want to go back to what you said about Spencer Petras. I think everybody knows I'm not exactly the biggest Spencer Petras fan. I am concerned with some of the limitations that he has, but that was one of his best games as a Hawkeye. And he did, going into the game, what did we want to see? Shots downfield. Not only did he take those shots downfield, he connected. The Laporta pass, it was easy. It was wide open. There's nobody within 15 yards of on the touchdown. But that first throw, and you could see even just coming out of Petras' hand, even before on TV as I saw it, you saw that Johnson was getting by. You could just tell that was going to be a good throw. When he's got a clean pocket, when he can step up, when he can deliver in time, he can make those throws down the field, and they did that. And you saw how big of plays they were able to get out of that, generate out of that. So you kind of put all that together. I saw enough out of Petras to at least slow down some of the hate that has been out there and some of the concerns that I had the last couple weeks. It's there. It ultimately, as I said, it comes back to the offensive line. They have to give him a clean pocket. Biz, I got some numbers here for you from Pro Football Focus, and it's very simple. When Spencer Petras is under pressure and when he has a clean pocket. With the clean pocket, he's completing 67% of his passes, 562 yards, 4 touchdowns, and 1 interception. When he's under pressure, though, these numbers are hideous, as bad as maybe any college quarterback at the Power 5 level. 10 of 27, that's 37%, 116 yards, 4.3 yards per attempt. Not when he's blitzed or anything like that, just under pressure, that is really, really bad. It's a pretty simple equation. Keep him clean, he's going to be all right.
Well, and I'm sure the coaching staff knows those numbers, Trent. They're not oblivious to that either. That's why it just cracks me up listening to people get mad about the fact that he gets rid of the ball too quickly and is always throwing to his first read. To me, I would much rather he just throw to his first read and get rid of the ball than wait, because as those numbers show, when he waits and pressure gets to him, very rarely good things happen. Because, you know, in addition to what you just said on the passing numbers, we've also seen, what, 5 or 6 times where he's just held the ball too long and taken a sack as well. So, you know, people better start accepting the fact that Spencer Petras is, again, he's not the biggest problem with our offense. They better start realizing that, you know, if this team's going to go anywhere, we need him to be the leader and the person taking us in that direction. Because I just think the fact of the matter is, Trent, this running game's not going to come together over the next two months. It's going to be inconsistent at best. So I think we saw the future on Saturday, which is teams are going to force Spencer Petras to beat him, and if he can, we'll be all right. And you know, you take out the horrible decision on the interception, which was truly horrible. Obviously, you know, he double clutched. He never should have thrown the ball, but also a really nice play by the D-back. Outside that throw, he was really, really good. Yeah. And the other thing that you probably didn't notice on TV, I mean, on TV it looked like a beautiful, clear day. There was a pretty darn good wind. I mean, it was probably 15-mile-an-hour wind blowing, kind of a crosswind. And, you know, the wind just doesn't really affect his throws, because he really, you know, as you know, he's got a cannon of an arm. And every one of his deep balls were, like you said, just right on target. So I saw a lot more positives than negatives on Saturday. And the fact of the matter is, hate him or love him, he's going to get us where we he's going to be the key cog going forward, because this running game is just not going to – it's going to be a problem all year long.
Defensively, good once again. There were some shaky moments out there. They had the trick play early that was wide open, and the quarterback just overthrew a wide open receiver running up the field there. Gave up some plays, had a short field after that turnover that you mentioned, after the interception, the long return that went along with it. But Jack Campbell, boy, he was flying around, and how did he look inside of Kinnick? That would be crazy.
Well, the first half, he was the only one. I mean, it was weird, because I thought the first half, our energy level on defense was just not what you come to expect. And fortunately, Jack Campbell was everywhere, but we just didn't seem to have that same just energy level that you expect. The second half, man, they were unbelievable on defense. You could see it from snap one. Obviously, Phil and I assume Seth Wallace and others lit into him at the half, because they were a machine in the second half. Not just Campbell, but you know, I thought Zach Van Valkenburg was unbelievable. He was the one that got us kind of turned around, because if you remember, we punted to the 10. He makes a 5-yard they run a RPO, and he makes a tackle for a 5-yard loss. They get back to the 5. The next play, they fumble. And, you know, he was unbelievable. I thought the whole D-line, as the game went on, just dominated the second half. So, you know, kind of what you come to expect. The first half was a few head-scratchers, but like I said, by the time it got to the fourth quarter, I had no doubt the game was over, even though it was a 7-point game, just because the defense was so dominant in the third and fourth quarters.
Defensive line, Van Ness, I mean, how this guy continues to do it, undersized, playing inside. He gets to the quarterback all over the place. He's been playing at a high level. It's Joe Evans, Joey the Bull. 4 sacks on the year, 17 pressures. Van Valkenburg has 17 pressures. Van Ness has 13. All these numbers from Pro Football Focus. It just, we didn't think this defensive line was going to be, I thought at best, it could be okay. At best, it'd be like a B minus. It is so much further than that already this year. It's really exciting. There's so much young talent here as well.
Well, we've talked about it in the past. The biggest problem with Iowa's defensive lines in the past was always lack of depth. And right now, that's probably the biggest strength with this team because Colorado State, like I said, they pushed us around a little bit in the first half. In years past, I think the D-line would have gotten gassed and we'd have been in trouble in the second half. But we could just keep throwing out fresh bodies. I mean, guys like Deontay Craig, I mean, he played a ton of snaps in the second half and was effective as well. And you said Van Ness gets in there. You get Logan Lee in there. I mean, it's just, when you can throw 8-9 bodies out there, that's a huge, huge advantage. And that's something that, you know, it's a good luxury to have. But, yeah, it's amazing because I feel like we've had the same conversation every single year. We go into the year thinking D-line's a concern, and by game 4, 5, 6, you're talking about D-line being a strength. And that's a testament to our coaching staff because, man, they've truly had to reload every single year in the D-line.
Right, yeah. Kelvin Bell, another former Hawkeye. You know, I talked about LeVar here a week or two ago, how he'd be a guy that's on my short list of candidates to take over whenever Kirk retires a part of the current coaching staff. Kelvin Bell, too, what he's done, he's kind of bounced around a little bit, doing a really good job with that group up front. Fun to watch, and Iowa defense, it's right there. You mentioned a couple of the talking points you want to talk about this week. O-line running game, we touched on it a little bit. You want to dig a little bit deeper here and looking forward. Goodson's a good running back. They're fine there. You mentioned you're not sure this can be fixed this year. Is there anything else, though, that they can do to unleash it? Is it more misdirections and counters and using the speed sweep and the jet sweep, using those more often? Is that enough with an offensive line that certainly is just not going to be great this year?
Well, I mean, the biggest problem, I think, with our offensive line running backs is that we really don't have that hammer, Trent, that can come in and wear people down. I mean, like you said, Goodson's a good running back, but for whatever reason, he continues to be very tentative between the tackles. He just doesn't seem comfortable and doesn't seem to be willing to put his head down and just take 3-4 yard gains. So I gave Statboy the assignment of looking at our second half running numbers, Trent, because I know we've had big leads and I know teams have stacked the box to stop the run, but man, have we been bad in the fourth quarter running the ball. You ready to look at how bad?
Mm-hmm.
So the four wins, again, teams are stacking the box, but the four wins, we have ran the ball 45 times in the fourth quarter for a total of 81 yards. So you're looking at 1.8 yards a rush in a time when you'd like to think, you know, you're starting to wear people down and you can start to impose your will. We're really doing just the opposite. 45 carries for 81. In none of the four games have we ran the ball for even 3 yards a carry in the fourth quarter.
Jeez.
26 of the carries have been for 2 yards or less, and 15 of them have been for negative yardage. Only 2 of the carries have gone for 8 yards or more. So not pretty across the board. The only good carry we had really at all in the fourth quarter was a 22-yarder by IKM in game 1, and that ended in a fumble. So of the 81 carries, there haven't been a lot of positives. So, you know, again, to me, it shows a problem across the board, Trent. You got a young offensive line that's really not moving people off the ball, and you don't have a hammer that you can go to in the fourth quarter to wear people down and come in and just bang out those 3-, 4-, 5-yard carries. So, again, I don't expect that the running game is going to get significantly better, so we're going to have to lean on Petras. But the concern is going to be, you know, we've been ahead by so much in most of these games. You know, we've been able to play incredibly conservative. What happens if it's a, you know, 7-point game in the fourth quarter? I mean, we're going to have to continue to be aggressive because, as these numbers show, we can't rely on the running game to wear people down.
Are we sure that Nick DeYoung's the best guy at right tackle right now for this team?
It seems like Jack Plum seems to me to be kind of the forgotten guy.
Yeah.
I thought end of the year last year, he played well. You know, he started against Wisconsin. I thought he handled himself well. But he, for whatever reason, he's clearly the number three or maybe even number four at tackle right now. But, you know, to answer your question, I don't know. I mean, I'm not sure we have any real answers at tackle right now. So is DeYoung the best option? Probably. I mean, it sounds like we don't have any other options to consider at this point.
You know, Colby, you can tell it's early. He's a true freshman. There's a reason that only a couple of them have played offensive line in the Ferentz regime. You just kind of build around there. And you kind of wonder, too, if Shooter gets back completely healthy, he's good to go, and he's part and he's out there, and it's not a rotation. He's playing, say, 85, 90% of the snaps at the guard spot. If that gives them a little bit more flexibility where they're able to work Colby more at the tackle spot and practice at that spot a little bit more. I don't know, just something to think about. But you're right. With Plum, I'm surprised. I was surprised we haven't seen more out there. Hey, they know a whole lot more about offensive line than we do, but just something to keep an eye on, I guess, going forward. Well, it's a Friday night football game. I hate these things. They suck ass, but here we are once again, as it will be Maryland welcoming in the Hawkeyes on Friday night. Maryland, well, they got a quarterback. They don't got much of a coach, but they got talent. That's something that Mike Locksley has always done throughout his career, and he put Statboy to work this week.
Well, yeah, I gave Statboy a couple simple assignments, Trent. One being, let's get to know our opponent. We don't play Maryland much. Let's look at their history a little bit. And then I also had to get some numbers on how has Maryland fared against ranked teams in the Big Ten. So let's start with get to know your opponent. And I'll just tell you, Statboy's initial response to me after I told him to send me some Maryland football info, here's his response. I'll read it to you. Maryland football is really boring over the years. So there's not a lot of names that jump off the page. So let's look at some names here, Trent. Let's start with quarterbacks. Can you name, let's say, three quarterbacks in Maryland football history?
Boomer
Esiason.
Not
including the current quarterback.
Boomer Esiason.
Correct.
Frank Reich.
Correct.
Led one of the biggest comebacks in college football history. And, I can name two.
So the all-time passing leader in almost every category is Scott Milanovic from the early 90s. Remember
there's
that
a good name?
Name,
yeah.
He threw for over 7,300 yards.
Wow.
He had a heck of a career there. So another one you should have gotten, Neil O'Donnell. Neil O'Donnell is
I didn't know that.
Another relatively well-known name. Mm-hmm. See? Yeah. But here's a tougher one for you, Trent. Can you name two Maryland Terrapin running backs? They do not have a long history of rushing excellence.
I'll make this very succinct. No, I cannot.
All right, their career rushing leader in almost everything again. Career attempts, career yards. Lamont Jordan from 1997 to 2000. He ran for over 4,000 yards.
Yeah, that was the Frisian era.
Yeah. Then the other names, Trent, you've got, I'll read you the next five or six in order here. Charlie Wazaki, Steve Atkins, Ty Johnson, who was recent, Lance Ball, Bruce Perry, Rick Bedejnik. So not a lot of household names in the running back category.
Not a who's who of college football.
Yeah. So wide receivers, Trent, I think you can get lots of wide receivers for him. Let's four wide receivers.
No, I got Stephon Diggs, and that's about it.
Oh, you can come up with a couple others.
Can I?
Yes, there's some names here. You should be able to get at least two others. Torrey Smith, Jermaine Lewis, Frank Wycheck, Darius Hayward-Bay. Relatively household names. There's your five out of your top six in career receptions. The other one is Jeroy Simmons, which I've never heard of. But the other ones. So wide receivers is kind of their strong suit. Can you name a single defensive player in Maryland history, Trent? There's two very well-known ones, actually.
Yeah, who was the guy 15 years ago that was a high draft pick? Linebacker, outside linebacker kind of guy?
Yeah.
Who am I thinking of? Why can't I think of the name? You got me.
E.J.
Henderson.
Won the the linebacker award.
Blindikoff? No, that wouldn't be it.
Buckus. Bednarik.
Okay.
Actually. And then the most famous one, you got to go back to the 70s, but Randy White. Randy White was a Maryland Terrapin. He's probably your most famous. And then the best thing about getting this info from Statboy, I don't know if you remember, but you talked about the Frisian era. Statboy immediately brought up the fact Statboy despises Ralph Frisian.
Yes.
Don't know why, really. I think it's a gambling issue. I think it came back to a game a long time ago where Ralph Frisian refused to, I think he took a knee at like the one or something like that. I'm sure Statboy can find the actual game and post it on Twitter for us. But his hatred for Ralph Regan has been long simmering over the years. So there aren't many people that dislike, not many people that fear the Turtle, but Statboy's one of them. He does not like the Maryland Terrapins because of Ralph Regan.
You know, speaking of that, this idea popped in my head just a week or two ago, because when Friedman had it up and running there in the late 90s, early 2000s, looked like, all right, they're going
to
be a power.
They went to an Orange Bowl, didn't they?
Yeah, went to an Orange Bowl, won an ACC. They're playing at a high level. They won double-digit games back-to-back-to-back years. And during that time, it was going to be James Franklin was the heir apparent. He was the coach in waiting, but it started to go south, and they basically told Franklin, you know what, we're going to get a clean house once Friedman's out of here. And, of course, he moved on. Just how different maybe Maryland football could be, because I think Franklin is a good coach, and he certainly recruits well in a place that's got a lot of talent. Maybe how different it would have been if they ultimately would have went that route.
He's going to be the next USC coach, isn't he?
I would think so, yeah.
I think so also. But since we both guessed it, I'm sure it won't happen.
Well, we'll get to that a little bit later on when we get to our picks, because last week, well, we both went one direction for one game and it didn't go well. And, it was a rough week for me. We'll get to that here in just a little bit. But anything else from Statboy on the Terrapins?
Well, let's talk about, Trent, the million-dollar question for Friday. Can we beat the Terrapins?
Okay.
And honestly, Trent, my feeling going into this game is I have no clue. I mean, most games going into it, I feel pretty confident or have kind of a feeling of dread. When it comes to Maryland, two things. One, I'm not sure how good Maryland is. Two, I'm not sure how good we are. I mean, I think you can make a pretty legitimate argument right now that we could be the third best team behind Arkansas or Georgia, or you could probably say we're the 33rd best team.
Right.
And either one you can make a legit argument for. So, I think Friday, the next 2 weeks, we're going to find out. Are we closer to 3 or are we closer to 33? But let's look at kind of the pros and cons here. We got some Statboy numbers we'll get into in a minute, but I jotted down kind of 3 reasons to be optimistic coming in and 3 reasons to be pessimistic coming in. So you ready to hear my 3 and 3?
Yeah, let's start with the optimism.
All right, so the optimism, Trent, we are 17-1 as road favorites since 2005.
Wow.
The fact of the matter is we've generally gone on the road and won the games that we're supposed to win. Second, if you remember last year when we played the short week, I know you hate the Friday night game, but you remember our Friday night game last year?
Yeah, against the Gophers.
Stomped the Gophers, absolutely stomped them. So obviously whatever we did last year, copy the plan and go do the same thing. Third thing, Trent, I mean, I think it's just incredibly important that we've already got a good road win. I know Maryland's going to be a tough environment. It's going to be rocking there. It's going to be a blackout. It's at night. But it can't be any more difficult than what they faced going into Jack Trice a few weeks ago. So, I mean, this team's already shown, as we talked about, defense travels. And so, I'm cautiously optimistic we're not going to go in and lay an egg. I think we're going to be ready to play, and we'll put up a good fight. The question is, a good fight good enough? Because I think Maryland's a good football team. So you ready to get into the 3 reasons for pessimism?
All right, let's go the other way.
First one, this is pretty clear when you look at the breakdown, but this is the biggest game that Maryland's had as a Big Ten team. They just haven't had a lot of success. They haven't had a lot of reasons for optimism. This is the first time, they are going to go into a game against top 5 team with a true legitimate chance to win, as we'll see in a little bit. So huge game for them. So that's obviously one reason for concern. Second, I think Tua's little brother is probably the best quarterback we may face all year. And if he puts up the same number he's been putting up, he completes 75% of his passes and, gets 2 or 3 touchdowns against us, he's a legitimate Heisman candidate going forward. And then the third concern, we talked about it earlier, Trent, but biggest concern I have, their D-line versus our offensive line. Their D-line's already got 16 sacks. They've got some talent on the edge. And as we've seen, talent on the edge has given us some fits. So, there's the 3 reasons for concern. So, what do you think? Are you feel more optimistic or pessimistic after those 3 and 3?
Well, I remain pretty optimistic, but I do have concerns like you. You mentioned their ability to get to the quarterback. That's been big time this year and generating pressure. Also, Maryland, 5th best defense against the run this year in the Big Ten. They're giving up just over 111 yards per game, but 3.4 yards per carry on the season. That's a little bit concerning when you look at that part. But my optimism, this is where my optimism comes. First, a number. Maryland, second most penalized team in the Big Ten. It's Mike Loxley. His teams are never disciplined. They're usually terrible, even if they have a lot of talent there. And he's just not a very good game day coach. So that gives me optimism, kind of those two things coupled together. And what they do best, yes, they'll go a lot of short routes, do those things, but they take lots of chances down the field. This goes back to the conversation we had against before the Indiana game. You want to do that against a Phil Parker defense, a Phil Parker coach team. Try to take shots deep, and that's a big part of your game plan. I will take Phil Parker on my side when it comes to that. So that's where my optimism comes for, more a game plan thing. I think this is a game I was going to have to score. In fact, this might be one where the 24-under streak comes to an end. Offense has got to do it. Offensive line needs to hold up. And again, it very well could be another game where Spencer Petras, this might be one he has to win himself.
I'll give you one more reason for optimism, Trent, and these are the stat boy numbers. So the biggest reason for optimism, Maryland, I'm just not sure they're very good. Their numbers, I mean, I know they're 4-0, but you look at their history, and they are absolutely atrocious against ranked teams as a Big Ten member. You ready to hear how atrocious?
Yeah, let's give it.
So they're 3-22 against ranked teams as a Big Ten member, but they're actually 0-22 against the Big Ten. Their three wins, you remember them? Three non-conference wins against ranked teams. Two of them are against the same team.
For Maryland,
yep. Maryland beat the same team back-to-back to start the year. Yep, they beat Texas twice. And then the other one was just recently as well. They stomped Syracuse when Syracuse was ranked, and then Syracuse went on to like a 2-10 season. Mm-hmm. So 0-22 against the Big Ten, though. And not only are they 3-22 against ranked teams, 7-18 against the spread in those games.
Wow.
And 11 of those 22 losses, they lost by 28 or more. Listen to these scores, Trent. 52-14, 28-0, 59-3, 62-3, 62-14, 66-3, 38-3, 59-0, 52-10, 38-7, and 73-14. And the vast majority of those have happened over the last 4 years. So I'm just not sold on the fact that Maryland has all of a sudden become a good team. So, again, should you go into this game and bet your house that the Hawks are going to cover the spread? Absolutely not. I mean, this is a game where we could, you know, go and completely get throttled because they've got some talent. And they've got, you know, they definitely have talented quarterback. They definitely have talented wide receivers. But like you said, I think I'm not a big Mike Loxley fan either. They're not a very disciplined team. After looking into things a little more, I feel a lot more optimistic than I did maybe a day or two ago. So Stat Boy's put me at ease a little bit. So thanks, Stat Boy.
Good work out of Stat Boy. And, well, good work out of you last week. You hit your picks 2 out of 3. The only one you lost was the Iowa game where you laid the 23. You are now 8-3-1 against the number. I, on the other hand, went an 0-4. And I'm under 500 at 5-7. You ready to go?
I am.
Let's start first. Iowa. What are we calling this? 3.5? Is that the consensus number out there?
I've seen 3.5 and 4, so we'll go 3.5, sure.
All right, let's go with the 3.5. We won't get a push if it comes to that. Hawkeyes laying the points in College Park.
I waver back and forth on this, Trent, but as I just said, I feel better about the Hawks after looking at the numbers. Like I said, Maryland 7-18. Against the spread, against ranked teams, we have done quite well and covered regularly on the road as a road favorite. So, got to go with the numbers here, Trent. Give me the Hawks, -3.5.
Going with the Hawks, -3.5. This is one of the ones before the season I had circled as I was W&L and things. I put it down as an L. And so we're going to go there again. Give me Maryland. I'll grab the points here. I'll dabble on the money line. I'll do everything. Give me the Terps and prove me wrong, Spencer Petras and company, on Friday night. With that, we jump to the national game of the week. And this week, Biz, we had a couple of choices. We could have gone Notre Dame-Cincinnati. Weird point spread there. Cincinnati going to Notre Dame Stadium. Or Arkansas-Georgia. You asked me what I wanted to do. Arkansas-Georgia, it's just so striking to see a point spread as big as this one is. I know that Georgia defense is great. Arkansas, not an elite-level offense, but they're really good defensively themselves. Is it currently 18? I got to bring up the current numbers out there because it's absolutely 18 and a half now.
I mean, you could make a legitimate argument, Trent, that Arkansas should be a top 3 or 4 team.
Oh, no doubt.
Because, look, I mean, they've got their two wins against are better than our two wins.
Oh, yeah,
I mean,
better than Texas, Penn State's
Texas
two wins.
A&M.
Yeah.
I mean, so, yeah, it's crazy that a team that probably legitimately should be top 3 or 4 is an 18.5-point underdog.
I see. There's a 19 that just popped at Circa. I mean, just absolutely wild here. I mean, don't you just feel dumb if you don't take the 18.5? I don't. How can you come up with a compelling case for Georgia at that number after what we've seen from Arkansas? Is this thing destined for, I don't know, 30-7? I guess that's the way you do it.
This feels like a Vegas nose game.
Yeah.
It certainly feels like there's a million reasons to go to Arkansas, but the one reason to go to Georgia is simply the Vegas nose. So. But honestly, to me, the bet this week in this game is the under.
Yeah.
48.5. These are, I mean, Arkansas' defense is legit. They shut down Texas. They shut down Texas A&M. Georgia is by no means a dynamic offense. But Georgia has an all-time great defense right now. I mean, I see it being a low-scoring game. But the fact of the matter is, Trent, I've been riding the Arkansas wave for a long time. And do you think I'm going to get off the get off the Woo Pig Suey Express at this point. You're nuts. I'll keep rolling with Arkansas Alley. And give me Arkansas plus 18.5. I know, it's, like I said, Vegas probably knows, but and I really like the under, but give me Arkansas 18.5, Woo Pig Suey.
I'm jumping with you on the under. I will take that 48.5. Just feels like way too big of a number with two good defenses here. Unless there's some defensive scores, which could certainly throw a wrench into things, I'll go. And I think ultimately I'll probably play Arkansas this weekend. It just, I don't want to be sitting there as the game's coming to a conclusion saying, what in God's name was I thinking? How about an 11 a.m. kickoff for that one too? Noon, of course, Eastern. Boy, that one, at the very least, that should be the ESPN 6 o'clock game.
Yeah, well, I think that actually probably helps Arkansas a little bit also. You get the early morning effect of, you know, everybody's probably still halfway asleep, and the crowd's probably not quite as rowdy as it would have been with the 7 o'clock at night game. But yeah, I mean, again, I can think of a million reasons to bet Arkansas, which means it's probably the wrong side.
All right, let's wrap it up here, Biz. You got your favorite bet of the weekend. What's jumping off the page to you?
Well, and Trent, not only is this my favorite bet of the weekend, this is my favorite bet of the year, which means go run to your local bookie, sportsbook, whatever, and then bet the other side. Because anytime I start to feel this confident about a game, it generally ends poorly. But this line's either gone plus one, minus one. We'll just call it even, call it a push, Trent. But Wisconsin is free money this week. Everybody's down on Wisconsin right now. They've already lost two games. They are going to stomp Michigan this week. Look at the numbers. I mean, Cade McNamara has not thrown more than 16 passes in a game, and the two times he's played against teams that have an actual pulse, he was 7 for 15 against Washington and 9 for 16 against Rutgers. Wisconsin has an elite run defense. Michigan is not going to run the ball on Wisconsin. They'll try. Harbaugh's stubborn enough. He'll keep hammering. But this Michigan team's not nearly as good as people are pretending they are right now. And so Wisconsin's angry. They're going to be desperate. They'll finally realize that maybe we just shouldn't let Graham Mertz do anything other than hand off and throw checkdowns. And Wisconsin, the best of both worlds in this game, Trent, because if I'm right, then I sound like a genius. If I'm wrong, Wisconsin has three losses, and they're basically out of the Big Ten West race. So can't lose at this one, but give me Wisconsin at even or minus one or whatever it is now.
All right, we got you and Bucky Badger, and I agree with you. That's one that I had circled this week for all the reasons that you laid out. I'm going to stay in the Big Ten with my favorite bet of the weekend, and there's so many things that are pointing here to Penn State. I think it's an easy one, and I hate when it feels like an easy one. But after what happened last season, that first game against Indiana, was Penix in, wasn't he, on the attempt down there on the goal line? The arguments will continue all week long. Indiana stinks. It's just a bad football team. I watched them a ton on Saturday night against Western Kentucky. I was in that game financially, and that's why I was watching a lot of it. They're just not very good. Penn State is. You could say maybe it's a look ahead with Iowa looming the week after. But because of what happened last season, I just don't see that happening. This thing, I think, is going to be a blowout of epic proportions here. You know, 38-10, something along that range. Penn State, you're not even laying two touchdowns here. I think you cruise in with the victory. Get on it now, because this thing's going to keep trending upwards. Jump on it right now. Penn State lay the 12.
If what you just said, I'm going to wait until it goes the other way, Trent. It gets about 14, give me Indiana. I think Indiana's I'm not sold on Penn State being the great team you think they are. I mean, obviously they look great against Auburn, but then Auburn should have lost to Georgia State the following week. So I think Penn State's a good team, but I'm not sure they're the elite team that you're talking about. And I think Indiana, Tom Allen gets his teams ready to play. And you talked earlier about James Franklin being a good coach, and I think he is. He's a good recruiter, but I think Tom Allen's a better game coach than him. So I'll disagree with you on this one, Trent.
All right.
I think Indiana hangs around and makes it at least a if Penn State might cover, but it won't be the epic blowout that you're predicting.
All right, Biz. Well, you shot a hole in that one, but you should, because I'm 5-7 on the year. You're 8-3-1. Listen to Biz, and we will go this week with that. All right, Biz, let's get out of here. Before we do, each and every week, it's time for Biz's Beat.
Hey, kids, gather around for Biz's Beat of the day. Okay, here's Biz's Beat of the day.
I don't know if you saw this morning, Trent, but there is a number one ranked Iowa sports team as of this morning's ranking. The field hockey team is ranked number one in the nation, which leads me to a bigger picture business beat, Trent, which is, has there ever been a better time to be a Hawkeye than right now? Just across the board, man, Iowa athletics is peaking right now. You're talking wrestling national champs. You're talking the number one ranked field hockey team, men's basketball, its best year in an era last year. Women's basketball is ranked top 10 coming in. Football is obviously ranked top 5. You got a track team that's won back-to-back conference titles. You got a baseball team that's peaking in the right direction. Heck, even a women's soccer team that won a Big Ten title last year, Trent. So we started at the beginning and said last Saturday was a great day to be a Hawkeye. But let's be honest, it's just a great time to be a Hawkeye right now. A
lot of wins. Winning, what is it? Win, graduate, do it right. And that's happening. Tip of the ball cap to Gary Barta, because felt like for a while he wasn't going to survive everything that was surrounding him. And he's built a pretty good athletic department as a whole, top to bottom.
You know my hatred for Gary Barta, so I'm just going to say we've built this program in spite of Gary Barta.
There it is. Biz, fun stuff this week. Friday night matchup, and then the big one, 3 o'clock with Penn State looming. Fox will be here for the big noon kickoff. A lot of buzz leading into it. Let's get a win on Friday night.
Yeah, exactly. Obviously, we can talk about that Penn State game next week, and there's a lot of fun things that you know, potentially coming our direction. And, you know, there's that could be an epic game, but it could also be a real bummer if you go and get stomped by the Turtles. So focus on Friday. Go get the job done out east. Go out for a business trip and come back with a W.
Talk to you next week, Biz.
All right, go Hawks.